Hey everyone, it's your boy Evan, co-host of Locked On Cavs, the only Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, the first feature human voices and have both co-hosts be verified. But Chris Manning is out of office, he's on deadline, so I gave him tonight off. But I'm joined by friend of the pod, Ty Windisch. As some of you may know already, Ty is the co-host of the Eurostep podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. He's also the network coordinator of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and also the network coordinator for Blue Wire Hustle. If you're interested in starting your own sports podcast, hit Ty up. He can really help you make that happen. But on today's show, Ty and I will be talking about the Bucks in the finals, how Milwaukee has rebuilt through mid-first-round picks and through smart trades, kind of an avenue Cleveland has to take, you know, Giannis except being the exception here. And also, we'll talk about him about the current state of the Cavs as well. So strap in, strap on, and get ready to enjoy another one episode of the number one Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Cavs need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down. Ground. Here goes Okoro to the bucket. And oh my, Okoro throws it down. 10 seconds to go. Here comes Colin Sexton. Sexton chased by Hill. Off to Stevens. Oh my. 45 ticks to go. That shot is blocked by Nance.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Prince knocks down that Harden pass. Garland's there. Garland upstairs for Allen. Oh, look out.
There you go. That's called team ball right there.
Joining me now is the man other than Justin Rowan gunning for the top guest appearances on Locked On Cavs. Folks, you know him at this point, but if you don't, he is co-host of the Eurostep. He is doing so much work with the Blue Wire Network, whether it's Blue Wire Hustle or just the network in general. He is my good friend and always a longtime friend of the pod. Ty Windisch. Ty, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great today, Evan. You know, game six of the finals tomorrow as we record. Mm-hmm. Bucks one game away from the first chip in 50 years. It's a great day. For a Monday, it's a great day.
There you go. I love the good vibes, man. How are you feeling? They were down 2-0. Tell me the emotional roller coaster you've been going through this series and the playoffs in general with the Bucks, man, because it's been a ride. Like, that Brooklyn series looked dicey, and then they looked flat-out dominant in the East Finals besides Atlanta nipping at him a bit, but it's been a trip when they play Phoenix so far.
Yeah, it has. You know, it's funny. I think the ride over the first three rounds and really the second and third round made it like I was less torn up in the finals so far. I have been less torn up, I should say. It's clearly not over, but like, I think the Brooklyn series really just galvanized the team and like most of us watching, covering the Bucks, like, they can just do it. They keep finding ways to win. I'm not going to count them out or assume they're done until they're literally done at this point. Like, I know the injuries in the Nets series. I get it. They were down 3-2 to Brooklyn after just about the worst possible game five. They win game six in Milwaukee, and then Giannis and Chris outduel KD at home in a game seven to keep going. And then, like, they dropped the first one of the Atlanta series. They're battling back. Looks like they're going to go up 3-1 there. It wasn't a good start to game four, but still. And then Giannis goes down, and it's like, oh, God, it's maybe the whole, you know, iteration of the franchise is over. They bounce back, win two without him, and he comes back for the finals. Like, they keep finding ways to get it done. And that's the thing with this Bucks team. I think it frustrates a lot of people, especially, like, I think Bucks fans have just let go and let God at this point. But like, people trying to really closely analyze, like, how do they keep doing it? And there's some great work figuring it out. But part of it is this is just a team that knows how to win. They don't care if they're down. They're not concerned by it. I think they get that from Giannis. I mean, the viral clip about him, you know, I missed two in a row in Oklahoma City. I missed all these free throws. I've been dunked on. Like, that just seems like that mentality has permeated the whole team. And it's like, they're not concerned. They're not afraid. They're just going to keep going out and playing. And now that mentality and their skill level, of course, has got them one game away. So, no, I feel good. I think game four, when it looked like they might have lost that game, that was probably the worst I've been all series. But, you know, games one and two were frustrating, but I never felt like they were out of the series. I mean, we've seen them be down 0-2 before. Mm-hmm. We knew they just need one road game at some point. I was confident they would get it. And Turns out, for once, confidence in the Bucks was well placed.
It's just interesting, man, because like you said, you have full faith. There's a lot of stigmas with Milwaukee, like Budenholzer. I'm sure you hear it from a lot of Cavs fans because the Cavs kind of made Budenholzer look bad when he was with Atlanta. Like, you heard that. You hear all the time Giannis can't win, but they come back, like you said, and they beat the Nets. And injuries aside, like, they, it's unfortunate how the season ended for Brooklyn. I think they'll be back and they'll be a lot stronger than ever before. And I don't know. I think that series really crystallized things for them, where they finally learned, okay, it's time to nut up or shut up. And these are the games that matter most. We can't crumble what, like, a cheap suit in the rain in these situations and actually battle through adversity. And they did that. And like you said, Atlanta nipped at them a bit. And they were seeing it again in real time. They were down 2-0. I remember game one. I like said this because I was amazed Giannis played in game one, or was ready to play at all, because I was under the impression his knee was basically jelly at this point. And he drops 20-17-4, and Chris Middleton backs him up with 29. But like, the rest of the team kind of let him down. And then you have like Chris Paul and Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton just kind of getting what they want against Milwaukee. I've just been really impressed to see they go down this 2-0 hole. I'm of a big proponent where, at least in championship series, it doesn't really start until the road team wins. Because, one, everybody gets free Doritos Locos Taco from Taco Bell, which, you know, hey, thank you to Milwaukee for that. But also because you have to – it's hard to win on the road. And I've been to games at Fiserv Forum – or not – yeah, that's what it is. Oh, yeah. I was about to call it the BMO Harris-Bradley Center, but – I've been to games there before. It's incredibly hard for road teams to play there. Of course, I watched the Cavs play the Bucks, and this is, you know, it's just a laughable affair in general. But it's tough. But like, and Phoenix is no easy place either. And Milwaukee went in and did it, and they were down pretty bad. Like, full disclosure, I was at dinner with my girlfriend for anniversary when the game started, and then I kind of got yelled at for checking my phone to the score. I'm like, oh, wow, Milwaukee's down quite a bit in the first quarter. And she's like, I don't know, I think the Bucks will battle back. She's been watching the series with me. And let's she's go. Like, and then about like when the Milwaukee took the momentum, she just like pulled out her phone and showed me the score. She's like, I told you they'd pull back and take the lead. And I'm like, yeah. And then like, I think you really see the confidence of the Bucks on full display when they're up one in the closing seconds of the last game and Drew Holiday throws a lob past the Giannis. Like, that's such a ballsy play, but that's also just such a tone setter and such a momentum shifter too, that I think the Bucks have really gotten a lot of gorillas off their back at this point. And I think the rest of the league should be scared because Milwaukee's kind of figured out how to finally win.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing about it is it's not like, and I don't want to get on my small market high horse too much, but it's not like some of these.
We'll talk about that. Don't worry. Yeah,
it's not like some of these teams where, you know, it's like, all right, one guy wanted to come here, and then two more guys wanted to come here, and we did it. I mean, there's always key ads. I mean, the Bucks' first championship, you know, Oscar Robertson was the big ad. It's, you don't always draft every single rotation player. And Phoenix is the same way, by the way. It's a cool story for small markets either way, because clearly, I mean, Phoenix is much bigger than Milwaukee, but we all know, not a free agent destination. They pull off the Chris Paul thing, but most other guys there outside of Crowder, they drafted and developed, which is awesome too. But I mean, the Bucks, Giannis and Chris since 2013, like, this has been being built for such a long time, and those guys have been through so much. And I think it shows you, in addition to obviously get a little lucky and end up with the right guys, like, don't give up too early on those guys and find guys who can build a culture. Because I think the Bucks have a very strong culture. I think in numerous ways, they are incredibly lucky that Giannis is the star that they lucked into, because he's such a great tone setter for a franchise. He's such a calming presence, I think. You know, he's not going to address his state with the team after a international team press conference. Like, it's all, I think most things are handled behind closed doors and stuff like that. So it just shows you, like, you know, they've been through so much, they stuck together. I think that's a testament, in addition to just being good and having experience, but like having the right culture. And that, you know, talked about Bud, I think Bud has improved vastly. Like, I think he's a much better coach in the playoffs, much more suited for this than he was previously. And I get that, like, that's just hard, I think, for people to grapple with. I think, you know, everyone knows players develop, and I feel like coaches, especially one, I mean, Bud is relatively young. I think he's 51, but he's been obviously a head coach for more than half a decade now between Atlanta and Milwaukee. But he's just better. He's figured some things out. I think there's been some push-pull with players, especially Drew and PJ and him. But still, it's at the end of the day, he's the head coach. It's his calls. He's doing much better. And I think he's gone from, no, there's no way you can win four series with that guy, to more like a typical coach where there's going to be some bad calls. He's not going to get everything right. That's every coach. But he's not taking you out of contention anymore. And I think even though they haven't won it yet, they haven't won it, at this point, it's you can't really argue, because if you're watching this run, it's like, okay, he's, again, not been perfect, not arguing that. I don't think he's the best coach in the league, but he's moved away from not being good enough, period, anymore, which is huge. I mean, that's the thing. And I think the Bucks, from him to Giannis to Chris to even a guy like Pat Connaughton, they've just, like, they've invested and doubled down in investments in their own guys. And some things like Bledsoe, clearly, like, some moves had to be made, but I think there's a lot of value in that, in a team not being too shaky. And, you know, if you have a firm belief in your guys, I think you need to go with that.
Hey everyone, I will be right back with more from my conversation with Ty Windisch, but I want to give you a quick word from one of today's sponsors, Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless and seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. They're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto's prices are reliably low and are for every customer. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to your auto parts needs. So if you're interested, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com. You know, you're giving me a really good transition point here. This is the on-court chemistry, or on-air chemistry, I should say, between Ty and I, because, one, I don't call you T.I., Chris does, but also because you and I just have a good rapport and good vibes. But that's a good transition. Like, Phoenix is a good example of this too, but we'll focus on the Bucks right now. Cleveland's also in a pretty small market, and it's pretty clear that LeBron's going to retire a Laker, so I don't think he's going to come back anytime soon, especially with that extension he signed. And he was the real driving and galvanizing force, where he'll just give front offices like a crib sheet of saying, okay, I need this player to play with, and I would like you to sign these guys. Like, when he first came back to Cleveland, he said, okay, he got on the phone with Kevin Love right away and said, okay, I want you to come to Cleveland with me. And he got Kevin Love to agree to come here. Because Kevin Love was hesitant to staying in Cleveland before that, because I think the Cavs had a trade in principle worked out. But you look at that, then he says, okay, Cleveland, I need you to sign Mike Miller. I need you to sign James Jones, because they're some of my favorite teammates in Miami and they're shooters. And James Jones was a good locker room presence, obviously. And now he's general manager of the Suns. So it's kind of funny how it works out there. But Ty, how important is it for, like you said, like, to build a culture? Like, you look at a team like Cleveland, they're trying to do that, but How much can Cleveland emulate of Milwaukee? I mean, and granted, Giannis is a transcendental player. I don't think you can find one of those. But, like, the Bucks are a really good case study of a team in Phoenix too. But again, we're going to focus on Milwaukee, where they take late lottery picks or mid first round picks, and like Chris Middleton was a second round pick, and then they make smart trades to get players like a Drew Holiday. Like you said, they pulled the plug on Bledsoe and realized it didn't work, but how much can you think Cleveland can glean from that? Because they're in the midst of a rebuild, and without LeBron here to kind of be that driving force to invite players here, like, Cleveland isn't a destination for players. I know plenty of guys who wouldn't want to spend their winters in Lake Erie, on Lake Erie, if they don't have to. So how much do you think the Cavs can glean from Milwaukee? Because they're on the doorstep of a championship, and I think the Cavs would like to be back. And if Milwaukee or Phoenix pulls this off, I'm hoping for your sake, Milwaukee, like, it's a big win for small market teams.
Yeah, it is. I think it's tough because we all know, like, the uncomfortable part of it is, like, You have to get a little lucky with getting the guy first, right? Like, it all starts there. But I do think the good news for the Cavs, especially the Cavs who have been, you know, top of the lottery-esque for the last couple of years, but yet to come away with one or two, the good news is, like, the Suns and Bucks have shown you don't necessarily need to. I mean, obviously, Ayton was a first overall pick, but a distant third in importance on the Suns, at least to this iteration of the team. And the Bucks, their only top two pick in the Giannis era was Jabari, who they got literally nothing for. He basically walks away for nothing after the rookie deal. So, you know, there's luck involved. There's certainly luck involved. But I think we've seen, like, if you make enough smart selections near the top of the lottery, get those guys in and develop them, and there's a little bit of mysticism there, right? There's a little bit of luck. It's hard to know exactly what to do, but you just need to keep doing that. I don't think you can shortcut it. I think you need to trust that process and trust your own scouting and player development staff with building those pretty raw building blocks you get. And you have to develop them as much as possible. And then a year, 2 years, every so often, kind of reevaluate. Okay, who is what? You know, how is Sexton? You know, what's the ceiling there? What can he be one day? How much? Ooh, I know, careful, I know. Ty. But all of them.
You're treading a fine line here.
Okoro, I know. All of them. You know, hopefully for your guys' sake, Mobley in about a week. Keep looking at and seeing, you know, how – I think you just have to keep looking at how close you are. And I think what you can glean from the Suns and Bucks is when you figure out you've got the guy. For the Bucks, obviously Giannis. For Phoenix, it was Booker. I don't think you should wait to be aggressive and build around those guys. And I think that's the most important thing. I mean, like, adding CP for the Suns to a team that obviously they had that bubble run but hadn't been to the playoffs as long as Booker had been there. And the Bucks, I mean, they've gotten clowned for pretty much all of these moves either at the time or in retrospect. But, like, they swung for MCW in 14-15. Like, then they went and swung for Bledsoe when it was clear he wasn't good enough. They added Greg Monroe, which was a huge signing at the time. Like, they realized they
had, I remember that. That was huge.
Greg Monroe picking the Bucks over the Knicks and Lakers, who both offered more money reportedly, was like such a huge. We thought that team was going to be so great. They weren't. There were some internal issues. The other thing is, don't hire Jason Kidd no matter what you do. But sorry, Mavs, it's not looking good. But the Mavs are a good example, though. Like, they took one swing in Porzingis, but otherwise they haven't done all that much. And I think, like, you need to not only, like, work on getting better fast when you realize you have a guy who can be, you know, the guy, but, like, you have to show them that, like, hey, we're not going to sit on our heels. And I think that's how a small market team can work to keep guys. It's like, hey, we're working on this. Like, we're getting stuff done. Like, we're pulling stuff off. And you have to do well. I mean, I think the Pelicans did that, and it just didn't work out, unfortunately, whether it was Boogie or Buddy Hield, or, I mean, they even got Drew at one point too. But, like, the Bucks Drew trade, like, they're not here if not for that. It's clearly. And so you can talk about overpays or whatever, but I think once you figure out you've got the young guy who it's like, okay, this guy can be really good. Maybe he's not Giannis level, but Booker level, I think that's more attainable in the draft. I think that does happen every so often for most teams. I just think you can't wait. Like, I think you just need to be aggressive in trying to win with those guys, because as we've seen, you know, once they're toward the end of their rookie contract, a lot of these guys, they're ready to play some winning ball, even if they're not ready to go on a run like Phoenix has here. I just think it's super important to prove to them and do stuff like the Drew trade, everything else, because at a certain point, it's just worth more to build something than it is to sit on those draft picks.
Hey, everyone. Evan here again. I have to give you one more quick ad read because Chris has spent all the Locked On Cavs money buying our fifth yacht and sixth private jet. It's really hard as the co-host of a multi-trillion-dollar podcast. But if you check out today's sponsor, we'll be able to afford so much more. And today's episode is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including the MLB, the NBA, the NHL, and all of your UFC, MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Do not sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to a championship. Head to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but only if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
No, I think you and I are in agreement on that one for sure. And this just kind of leads into our last topic of the day here. And something we kind of explore at depth because you said you're fascinated with how the Cavs are currently constructed or you're intrigued by them. And that's a refreshing take to hear. I'm frustrated by it. So I'm gonna roll the ball out to you. How do you feel about Cleveland's current ethos, where they're at in terms of young players? Like, this is a safe space. So if you want to talk about Colin Sexton, if you want to defend him, if you want to talk about him being max worthy, there's a lot of interesting storylines for this Cleveland team. And I think they're on the precipice of being either an absolute disaster or a competent organization. And some people might think it's extreme, but I'm of the mentality, and Chris feels this way too, that at least under Kobe Altman's tenure, because I think they knew LeBron was gone at that point, this is the most important offseason in Kobe Altman's time as general manager. And it's going to, a lot of the decisions he makes are going to make or break this team going forward. But, and somebody from the Athletic or the Ringer said this as well, like, this pick they make of this upcoming draft, whether it happens to be Jalen Green or Evan Mobley, or they trade up for Cade Cunningham, it won't make or break the franchise this year, but it's going to give you an idea of where the rebuild is headed. Like, Ty, how do you feel about the Cavs?
I definitely agree. It's been their most important summer since, you know, whenever LeBron dipped out, because not only is it, I believe this is their highest draft pick since then, right? I think correct.
A team that's like Cleveland that's never really had draft luck, still won't get the first pick, but it was 8 for that's Sexton, right. 5 for Garland, 26 for Windler, 30 for Kevin Porter Jr., and then 5 for Okoro. So this year will be the third pick. So yeah, technically the highest. Yeah.
So not only that, though, also first time they're ready to make a decision on one of these guys with Sexton, right? And I think that's equally as important. I'm so torn on this because at the one end, I get that, you know, he's limited in some ways right now that are just, it's very important stuff, right? I mean, the defense has come along certainly since earlier, but like the playmaking and everything else. So even though the scoring numbers are so gaudy, it's a tough decision, this max talk and everything. I'm not going to lie on that one. I don't want to belabor this because I know it's become like this horrible thing on the Cavs community online. But I think unless you're getting like a nice return, and your reporting and other reporting seems not great so far, what they would get back, I would try to keep him. Even if it means you don't sign an extension now and you let him play that thing out and hit restricted free agency. Personally, I would rather take the shot on that and see if he does get a little bit better than get like, you know, oh, here's 26 in salary filler. Like, for me, it's just not worth it. Like, I would rather get the extra look. Yeah. But even though I'm not sold on him, I would rather do that, I think, even than max him. Like, give him another year. The guy's a hard worker. Let's see what happens. But I do get that there's a logjam, especially if Mobley goes too, and they don't get Cade. If they get Cade somehow, then who even cares about whatever else? I mean, then you've got the franchise guy. But I think Mobley or Green could be that, or Suggs or whoever could be that too. But I think it's hard with, I get him and Garland are not a good fit together, and it doesn't seem like it's really worked. It's tough. I still think I'm at a point with this team where even if you have to like stagger their minutes a bit or something, like I'd rather get the intel for one more year, especially one more normal type year. It doesn't help the Cavs that a lot of these seasons have happened, like the COVID shortening and they miss out on the bubble and they're away for so long and everything else. It's just tough. And I think, I know it's hard to hear because I'm sure fans want something more exciting, right? Like, there's been so long of this slog, although they had some fun moments last year. I also don't think I'm doing anything drastic with Love at this point either. Like, I'm not stretching him. I've seen the math. I know it goes down to $9 million a year, and I know the Cavs would like to do more. I think that's a really bad idea to stretch out that cap hit. Like, if you want to get rid of him, fine. Like, I don't care that much about that. But eat the dead money now and be less active now, personally, is what I would say. And just get over it in 2 years instead of 5 years. 5 years of that, like, that, then it could end up hurting you when you know, Sexton or Garland or Okoro or Mobley or whoever is ready to contend. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, we could sign that guy, but unfortunately we don't have the money. So I don't know. It's tough. But at the same time, I'm like contradicting myself because I understand how tough of a pill it is to swallow, right? Like, you know, don't do anything for now more. It's everyone, the org, the fans, you, I'm sure, want something more exciting to happen. I'm not sure what the blueprint is until you're sure about, you know, you have a guy who can be the guy or multiple guys who can come together to be the guy. So I do feel like wait and see is the best answer, which sucks because no fan base deserves all these years of like, you know, hopefully we vault from 4-1 this time.
Yeah, no, it's tough, man. Like I said, it's really hard when you have such rotten draft luck when you're the Cleveland Cavaliers.
But I guess honestly though, like I know people are very high on Garland. If Garland gets better and Sexton
I'm one of those
gets
people. A little,
I mean, they might not even be bad, even if they stand pat, is the thing.
Yeah, like I think the Cavs, my evaluation of them is they weren't actively tanking until I think once they lost to Chicago back in March, and then the play-in felt a little bit out of reach. I think they were kind of grinding to get to that 10 seed and try and get into the conversation of it. They lose to Chicago. And I think they drop a game to Toronto too, if I remember correctly. And it just kind of pulled them out of the conversation. And then once teams started pulling away a bit, you saw a lot of shameless losing from both Cleveland and Toronto to kind of help their draft positioning. But like, I think you and I talked about this before last season. I said, I don't think they're like necessarily they're going to be actively tanking, no. Which fans are ripping out their hair because this is the Cade Cunningham draft. Why aren't they actively tanking? I'm like, I think they're just going to be a bad team that tries their best. And it's going to figure itself out in the end. And it did. It figured itself out. And granted, I think a lot of it was shameless losing at the end. But I think once the play-in was out of reach, like you said, I think Garland pops a lot. He had a really good sophomore season. I need to see more of it. And I need him to stay healthy to see it more consistently. Sexton is a good, is a very good three-level scorer for Cleveland. I think you see a lot of his lumps are finally just to say like, okay, these are areas he can still try to round out in his game, but like currently right now, this is what we have. And I think with Sexton, at least you know, the kind of player he is, you start to figure out his fit in a winning team, but you still continue, like you said, like the Bucks have done where they evaluate every year or two on these players to figure out like, okay, what's your fit? If this isn't going to work, we'll trade you. Or the Jabari situation is just kind of a unique one where they let him walk and sign with Chicago. That was just an interesting situation to begin with. But I think the calculus changed a lot when Giannis really started blossoming like he did. But
and that was a couple injuries later too.
Yeah, that too. Like Jabari's story is so sad. Yeah,
I think if he stays fully healthy, he does like get to that close to that Paul Pierce projection. Like
yeah, Paul Pierce Carmelo projection. I remember is what he had.
Quite good after the first injury when he got back healthy, but.
Yeah,
it is sad.
It's a shame to see how it ended up, because I remember everyone kept teasing him because it looked like a chunkier Donald Glover when they unveiled that like billboard sign out in downtown Milwaukee, him and Giannis standing side by side. But like Jabari was supposed to be the guy like that they were going to build around and like plant their flag on, and Giannis is supposed to be his like complimentary piece, and just things change. Yeah, and
you have to adapt.
Yep, and I think that's what the Cavs are kind of figuring out now, is like they have to adapt. I think some of the criticism is unfair for these young players. Like you have some people who come down really hard and say that of the young core players, that Jared Allen is the only reliable starter of the four of them. And like depending on the situation, you wouldn't start Darius Garland or Colin Sexton or Isaac Okoro. But I think that's a little unfair too, to talk about players that are 2-3 years into the league, depending on who you're talking about. But I just think the Cavs are an interesting case study, man, but it's going to be a really important offseason for them. And
you know what I think they should do quickly? I think I've said this last year too. Take the MLE or whatever. I think they're just going to have MLE is going to be their main spending, right? I assume that.
Correct. Unless they do waive Kevin Love and he gives a little bit of money back. But other than that, Jared Allen's going to eat up most of the cap, and they have his bird rights for that anyways.
So go use whatever this, we'll just say MLE for simplicity, but whatever. If you get cap space, use that. Like, find another playable wing. Like, add like an Otto Porter. I mean, not a great example because he's never healthy, but like someone like that, because I just feel like it would help out the roster a bit. I know Prince is there and Nance is sort of that, and Jetty is Jetty, but like just get more wings because I feel like they have all the guards, and now suddenly they have, you know, big situation pretty well covered with Allen, who I like a lot. I think that was a great move for them when they got him. But I would add another wing. I think make those guys make JB's life a little easier and make the guard's life a little bit easier.
No, you and I are in agreement on that, man. Like, you make JB's life easier. If you really do believe in the ethos of building around two young guards in your backcourt, you need to add size, especially on the perimeter, to help cover a lot of their defensive issues. Like, it's so weird, man, because coming out of the draft, Colin Sexton was viewed as an Eric Bledsoe type player, one, because of his tenacity, but because of his defensive ability at Alabama. And he's not known as a shooter or really a strong offensive player. Like, he's done a total 180 on his perception. Like, I just think that's so weird when you look at, like, his pre-draft evaluations. Like, yeah, he's got some Bledsoe tendencies to him. He's not really a shooter. And now, look, he doesn't take enough threes, but he's a pretty good three-point shooter, and he is good at drawing contact and getting to the line, and he's good in the paint as well, but, like, abhorrent defensively. So it's interesting to watch this happen, but... Well,
it's like, I remember Booker was going to be the next Klay Thompson, and he's, like, now he's mini Kobe.
Yeah, Jalen Rose's comps are a little wild sometimes for players. Like, I like to go back. I personally miss, like, the Bill and Jalen NBA preview show. Like, I lived for that during college.
Oh yeah,
but it's tough to look at now. But no, I absolutely agree. Like, wing is the biggest need for the Cavs. Chris is a big proponent of, let's say, Jalen Green and Evan Mobley are both available. He would take Jalen Green because it's unfortunate because Kevin Porter Jr. is really a lot of what this team needs, like a big body shot creator like that, who has a little bit of, like, that twitchiness on defense and has some interesting playmaking upside. Like, there's a lot of fun stuff there, but yeah, I think if you take Mobley, you kind of build around that and you go forward and you just reevaluate things. Before we go, like you said, the returns aren't that great, so you wouldn't trade Sexton. You'd hold on to him and see if you can try and play out the last year of his rookie deal, then let him test the waters of restricted free agency, or would you kind of get a little antsy? Because Cleveland sometimes is the front office, it gets a little antsy.
No, listen, if the return is like a late first and uninspiring salary, I hold him. And it's not even necessarily just about, like, yeah, you could facilitate a deal at the deadline, or you could sign and trade him because that's like the new norm in the league because no one has cap space anymore. But, I mean, maybe he just gets good enough to a point where you are comfortable giving him the deal he's looking for, right? Or, you know, you work it out some other way. I just think a lot of the times, not just the Cavs, but a lot of teams, I feel like they get bullied almost into making these decisions too early when, you know, you're the team in restricted free agency. You have a lot of control here. And I know agent favors and everything is very important around the league, but I think if I'm the Cavs, I hardball it a little bit. Like, I would not give up the guy. What was it, 27 points last year? I'm not giving that guy up at his age for, you know, late 20s pick and, no offense, a Jetty level player making similar money. Like, if you're going to get a young guy you're intrigued on who fits better, or like a quality draft pick that, you know, okay, we can turn this into something that's going to help, then sure. But I would not move him just to move him personally. Like, unless there's more I don't know about, like, some sort of chemistry issues or something. If it's just, you know, the terrible online discourse, I think, unfortunately for you guys, I think I stick it out and try to see, you know, does he take another step to where we want to pay him, or do we find a deal later?
I agree with you on that one. I flip-flop a lot on it. Just, I think some of it's the discourse. I know the discourse exhausts the team. From some folks I've talked to, they said Collins weirded out by his fans kind of obsessing over him, and it's exhausting for the team when Collin is like the center of attention more ways than not, and he has a bit of a problem in the locker room. Like, some veterans have an issue with him. That's more to unpack for another day. One last trade offer before we go. Nekias has really put this idea in my head, and I'm kind of obsessed with it at this point. But let's say San Antonio approaches Cleveland and they say, okay, we want Colin Sexton, Jetty Osman, and possibly a second round pick or two for DeJounte Murray. Would you take that trade?
Yeah, I think I'd take that because I think that fits the Cavs a bit better. You lose some age there, which is is DeJounte 24 or 26?
I think he's 24 or 25. Okay, so
I think I'd do it just because the defense is such a nice fit.
He turns 25 before the season starts next year.
I think then, though, suddenly it's like you really need to find shooting, right? Like, I know Garland is like it should be there, right? Like theoretically, he should be a very good shooter. I know he pulls like he's a very good shooter. You really need to find a wing player who can truly space the floor in free agency. Because I think Murray is not exactly that. But honestly, it's I don't know. It's kind of a weird deal, actually. Like, I think you'd rather end up with Derek White. Oh, but then is Derek White just Sexton, but different? I don't know. I find it interesting. Yeah. I find it interesting. I think for that price, it might be worth trying, especially if things have gotten a little exhausted for the Cavs. Like, just go for a change of scenery. But it's an interesting one because I think I guess the defensive ability of Murray makes the fit with Garland better, even though offensively I'm not sure it is.
I think the defensive thing is a better fit with Garland, but I also think JD Bickerstaff would be looking at his chops because then you have Murray, Okoro,
that's true,
Mobley, and Allen, and then you have Darius Garland just kind of floating there as a shooter. Like that's a pretty fun defensive team, and I think the Cavs would whittle a lot of people down that way. But maybe we'll have to talk about that sometime soon, Ty. We're gonna need some content once the draft is settled and once the Bucks are champions.
Think about this. Oh, think about this. Dante for Sexton. Just think about that.
Dante DiVincenzo?
Yes. Not Exum. Dante DiVincenzo for Sexton. I'll call that in right now if you're down.
I don't think I could. No, I don't think you that could either. Good I don't faith. Think you could either. Colin would be really good on a lot of contending teams.
I would. I mean, listen, there's issues. It wouldn't be a seamless fit, but like just putting that kind of score from all levels in that two-guard spot, even if the defense suffers, I'll take the gamble, especially because Dante, kind of a sneakily similar situation. One, not similar totally, but 1 year left, and they're about to, they're in position to win a championship without him. It's getting a little complicated there. So,
no, I totally get that. But Ty, thank you again for coming on. Why don't you give everyone a quick shout of what you've been doing, where they can find you, and just the floor is yours.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, thank you. You can find me on Twitter at Ty Windisch, TiWindisch. Share everything on there. But as Evan kindly mentioned on the intro, the main focus these days, Eurostep Podcast Network, wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening to this great podcast. And if you haven't yet, go give both the Eurostep Podcast Network and Locked On Cavs 5 stars, especially on Apple. Even if you're not on Apple, find an Apple device. 5 stars, rating and review on Apple. Everyone loves that, and it means a lot. But yeah, follow on Twitter, follow the pod, and that just about covers it. So thanks so much for having me, Evan.
No, thank you, Ty. We always appreciate it.
Listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian Scalabrine and former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts will make selections and trades for your favorite basketball teams throughout the week-long special event. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's Audacy.